Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and this is Beta. In 1997, Janet Murray published a book called Hamlet on the Holodeck, The Future of Narrative in Cyberspace. In this influential book, Janet explores how the computer is reshaping the stories we live by. 20 years later, she updated the book. She feels that the intro to the new edition could have simply said, "I was right." Janet has some ideas about how digital technology can be applied to a variety of areas, including journalism.
If we're thinking about journalism, for instance, I like the work very much of Nani de la Peña, who reproduces actual events in a very complex technological way. It doesn't seem real. It obviously is a computer-generated set of characters, but it uses real audio, and it places you in this very privileged witness position. And the effect of being in that witness position is a deeper, more intimate understanding in some way of this particular event. And the other thing that she's very good at, which a lot of the people who are experimenting with journalism are not so good at, is that she takes an event that has narrative compression to it, has dramatic compression. She takes an understandable dramatic moment. She doesn't just try to stick a camera in an exotic place and assume that you will learn something just by spinning around and looking at it. She picks a particular politically significant and dramatically moving moment, just like you would if you were writing a feature story, but then she puts you in the middle of it.
40% of homeless youth come from the LGBTQ community because they've been thrown out from their homes due to their sexual orientation. We ended up using the audio of Daniel Pierce, who was thrown out by his own family, and he happened to record the terrible conversation that ensues.
Get off of me! What's wrong with you?
So by putting the audience in the middle of this physical moment, you know, using the motion capture, putting on digital characters, and then making it life-size so it happens all around you, it's so startling. Suddenly this thing you've heard, which is disturbing enough, and maybe you've watched videos of this type of scene, but if it's there and you feel physically vulnerable, you connect to Daniel and to what he's going through in a way that I don't think any other medium affords.
I think the hope of journalists is that committed journalistic practice like this could move people to action.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. You taught the first ever course in interactive narrative when you were at MIT in the early 1990s, and now you're teaching interactive narrative at Georgia Tech. Is there one particular piece of digital storytelling that you've introduced to your students that has had a real impact on them?
I'll tell you one thing that I have been teaching pretty regularly in all that time, and that is Groundhog Day. Because Groundhog Day takes the same situation and repeats it, but it is really well designed to make the different versions comment upon each other and to be parallel. So we never lose our place in that day. We always know where we are in that day. And we never get bored that we're seeing the same thing happen, all of them, rather than just one of them, twice.
Well, what should we drink to?
To the groundhog.
I always drink to world peace. Well, what should we drink to?
I like to say a prayer and drink to world peace.
To world peace.
World peace.
Mmm, this is wonderful.
Sorry, can I tell you?
How do you know so much about Punxsutawney?
I've spent a lot of time here. Small town people are more real, more down here.
That's how I feel.
Really? Would you like to try some white chocolate?
Yuck. Don't make me sick.
No white chocolate.
There is something so familiar about this.
Hmm?
Do you ever have deja vu?
Didn't you just ask me that?
It's really a masterful example that we are just learning how to do that with interactive storytelling, where we can segment the story that well and then juxtapose contrasting variants that pay off for seeing all of them rather than just one of them.
Yeah. I was delighted to see that in your book you talked about one of the all-time great animated shorts, Chuck Jones' 1953 Daffy Duck cartoon, Duck Amuck.
And yes.
This is in a chapter on immersion. What does Duck Amuck have to do with immersion and digital storytelling?
Well, you see, that's another reference point that I turn my students to every year and that I have since the beginning of teaching this course. Again, it offers variance on a situation that shows you how far you get in dramatic expectations just by genres. So Daffy is in an animation where the animator is constantly erasing parts of the frame or substituting other backgrounds or other elements, formulaic elements, for the ones that Daffy has started to act with.
Hey, psst. Whoever's in charge here? The scenery. Where's the scenery? Stand back, musketeers. They shall sample my blade. Okay. Have it your way. Daffy Duck, he had a farm, E-I-A-I-O. And on this farm, he had an igloo, E-I-E-I-O. Would it be too much to ask if we could make up our minds?
So he's a pirate and he's a cowboy, and it shows you just how much you get from these props in terms of genre. But then, as you get to the punchline, which is more and more gets erased, and so the very structure of animation is called into question with the frames themselves, and you realize that it's Bugs Bunny who is playing this prank on Daffy, it asks you to think about, well, when do you lose belief that Daffy is actually there? Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's so skillfully done that you never lose belief that Daffy is there, no matter what is erased. And because we have such a long history with Daffy Duck, that his presence once established, it's not erasable by calling attention to the medium.
All right, enough is enough. This is the final, the very, very last straw. Who is responsible for this? I demand that you show yourself. Who are you?
Huh? Am I a stinker?
Exactly. Very well said. It's like a Charlie Kaufman cartoon more than 50
yeah.
years before Charlie
yes.
Kaufman started
yeah.
writing screenplays. Yeah.
Yes. It's the same meta frame of mind. Exactly.
I'm curious, a lot of your students, I would imagine, they've probably never seen it before you screen it in class. What do they think of it?
They are fascinated by it, and they are familiar with anime and with comics. And they are familiar with that meta frame of mind because, as you say, it's current in a lot of other media frameworks. But the genre, and then they get the point about genre.
Mm-hmm.
Just giving them that idea of how much you can build from storytelling by signaling your genre allows us to have much more sophisticated interaction questions because it simplifies the process of making up stories.
Yes, because all these genres are very specific and they have their tropes and their rules.
Exactly.
You say that one way to understand the new digital narrative environment is through the metaphor of the kaleidoscope, and you reference an observation made by my fellow Canadian media visionary Marshall McLuhan that ties into this. What was it that McLuhan said?
He talked about the mosaic. So McLuhan called attention to something that is transparent to us now, which is the cognitive structure we needed in order to take for granted a newspaper. So a newspaper is a mosaic, as he points out. And of course, it's a mosaic that has headlines and leads and bylines and captions to pictures. It has all of these conventions that allow us to look at the front page and understand what's the most important story and what are the lesser important stories and just what degree of importance it has by the size of the headline, but that we can look at the whole thing and things are going on in Italy and things are going on in Washington and things are going on in science and things are going on in entertainment. And we can take all of that in, which is very complicated frame of mind to be able to take that in and as the ground, and then just look at the figure, you know, as the background, and then just look at the foreground of, oh, what is new? Mm-hmm. It's particularly relevant when you think about how news has moved to the digital sphere, how we had to reinvent those conventions very painfully over time, so that now we can look at the homepage of a newspaper, if we go to the homepage, and see the same kinds of information.
Yeah.
So the question is, how does a medium deal with complexity? How does it assimilate a lot of different pieces that then don't confuse us, but allow us to become more conversant about the world and make us more cognitively complex so that we get smarter as the media gets more developed. And my idea of what we need that's similar to that mosaic of the newspaper that McLuhan points out is a sense of a kaleidoscopic design frame for digital storytelling.
If we were to go old school, I'm just trying to make sure I understand this right. Say something from old school analog media. Would Akira Kurosawa's classic film Rashomon be an example of kaleidoscopic storytelling?
Yes. It shows the murder of her husband. And And that's a classic. But the thing about Rashomon is that the pieces are not as parallel as one might like. And the telling is not as compressed as one might like in an interactive form. So if you compare that to Groundhog Day, very different aesthetics in many ways, mm-hmm. that the storytelling has a different pace to it. And I think that in order for people to move between complicated stories, then you'd have to find something that has a pace somewhere in between Groundhog Day and Rashomon, you know, where the differences have that kind of moral physics of Rashomon. It's really important to see how the robber tells it versus how the woman tells it versus how the witness tells. But you can move among those different pieces more easily.
Janet Murray is a digital media professor at the Georgia Institute of Technology. She's also the author of the updated edition of Hamlet on the Holodeck, The Future of Narrative in Cyberspace. You can find out more about Janet at wpr.org/beta.
Hey, give me one sec.
What's going on here?
Oh, this is a program I wrote where you can battle an ogre in a samurai village. It's pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a badass fighter, but a gamer really needs personality. Hey, dude, this is my buddy, Ed.
Hey, Ed, nice to meet you. I'm Justin.
How are you?
Oh, great, super. Always such a treat to meet one of Gordon's friends.
So what's going on?
Gordon, I got a ship.
No freaking way!
The Orville Mid-Level Exploratory, and she needs a helmsman.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Are you ready?
Are you serious? Dude, I was born ready. This is crazy. Holy crap. Justin, we got a ship.
I am so excited for you guys right now. I mean, do you just feel, like, so blessed?
We'll take a shuttle up at 0900.
Sweet. Oh, hey, Justin, you got a ladybug on you.
Aw, neat.
You win.
Nice.
That does it for this edition of Beta. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, subscribe to the Beta podcast via iTunes or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And make sure to let us know what you think by leaving a rating or a comment. You can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter @wprbeta. Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Special thanks to guest producer Brad Kolber.
You should sleep late, man. It's just much easier on your constitution.
Our technical and music director is Steve Gotcher.
I wonder what that would sound like.
And our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
Funky boss, get off my back!
And thanks to you, our alphas. Until next week, I'm Doug Gordon.
Where's that voice coming from? From nowhere?